When we look at all the countries in the world, the only nation that has hope as a central theme in its national anthem is Israel. That's the only nation with hope in its anthem. Hatikva.
Welcome back to What Gives, the Jewish Philanthropy Podcast. From the Jewish Funders Network, I'm your host, Andres Pokojny. After the unthinkable events of October 7 and the subsequent crisis in Israel, we made a decision to suspend the podcast so that we could better focus on Israel's recovery. Now, we are resuming our work on What Gives, sharing with you expert knowledge in the field of Jewish philanthropy. We felt it appropriate to transition back into the show by sharing some of the powerful messages presented at the 2024 JFN International Conference, which we held recently in Israel. This week, we bring you a message of hope from Oded Adomi Leshem. Oded is a political psychologist at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem and the author of the book Hope Amidst Conflict. His expertise on hope and despair as political phenomenon is especially relevant today. At the JFN conference, he taught us about the power of hope to strengthen individuals and societies and shared his experience of Israeli resilience in the wake of October 7th. This podcast will continue to explore the evolving landscape of Jewish philanthropy, now unavoidably shaped by the new and enduring challenges we face as a global Jewish community. So let's begin. I hope this mini-series from the JFN conference resonates with all of us in these trying times. So take a listen.
So it's a pleasure and an honor to be with you this morning. My name is Oded Adomi Leshem, and I'm a political psychologist from the Hebrew University. For the last 10 years, I've been studying and teaching and writing about hope. I study hope as a philosophical idea. I investigate hope as a psychological construct, as a political phenomena. I'm also a quantitative researcher, so I found a way to measure hope, and then we measure hope for peace in conflict zones around the world. And during these 10 years, I saw that many, many people share my fascination with this very elusive idea of hope. But since the 7th of October, many people ask me, is it appropriate to talk about hope amidst this dire crisis? Is it okay to talk about hope when the numbers of casualties are so high, when hostages are still held in captivity? This is an important question. But actually, when we look at research, we have a clear answer to that. And the answer is yes. In fact, hope becomes more relevant, more significant, and more important in times of crisis, in times of distress. When everything is fine and dandy, when we are happy with our lives, then the impact of hope is partial, is marginal. But in times of crisis, in times of hardship, this is when hope becomes powerful, significant, meaningful. Think about a small candle flame. In a well-lit room, the influence of this small candle flame is marginal. But as the room becomes darker, suddenly this tiny small light from the candle flame becomes meaningful, significant, relevant, even crucial. In fact, the darker the room is, the more important and significant is this flame. And hope functions in a similar way. Now, one of the first assignments I give to my students is I ask them to draw hope. I said, if you could visualize hope, how would it look like? And I thought about handing 600 crayons here and asking you to do this assignment. Maybe we'll skip this part. For now, I'll just share with you what my students draw. So many students draw rainbows, sunrises, colorful pictures, joyous pictures, full of happiness. And indeed, it's intuitive to tie hope with happy things. But I want to show you, I think, a more accurate portrayal of hope. This is a painting painted by George Watts, an English painter from the late 19th century. And as you can see, this is quite gloomy. So we have a female figure sitting on the globe, and the globe is almost drowning. So there is a sense of distress. There is a sense of crisis here. And her eyes are covered. So she does not know where the future is taking her. And indeed, hope is tied to uncertainty and unpredictability. When we know where we are going, when we are certain, we don't need hope. We need hope at times of uncertainty. And she's playing on this shabby-looking old harp, which has only one string left. And she's plucking on this string and trying to listen to the soft note from this shabby-looking harp when her eyes are covered, when she's almost sinking. And this is hope. So hope is our ability to take the tiniest, slightest positive signal and use it in times of distress, in times of uncertainty, in times of hardship. And indeed, a bit counterintuitively, many philosophers talked about the downsides of hope and the shortcomings of hope. So philosophers from ancient Greek philosophers to postmodern thinkers talked about the dangers of hope. So for example, Spinoza and Descartes said hope could lead us to be utterly naive. Hope could lead us to paint reality in rosy colors when this is not warranted, or dismiss the challenges that lie ahead just because we want something so badly. And this is a great problem. Certainly when we're talking about social change, we want to know the challenges that lie ahead. So that's one disadvantage. And the second issue, the second problem, is that hope is always tied to pain. When we hope for something, when we really want something, we are anxious about it. So hope is tied to anxiety. Skeptical people, pessimists, have it easy. They're not anxious. It's the hopeful people who are anxious, right? And there's a possibility of frustration. So hope is tied to pain, and hope is tied to suffering many times. And in fact, we also see it in the Bible. Hope is mentioned the most time in the book of Job. So also in the Bible, hope is tied to pain and suffering. So I hope I convinced you that hope is an awful thing and that we all should avoid it. Thanks a lot for coming. Of course, I am kidding. My intention was to highlight the downsides of hope so we could work with hope better. When we know the shortcomings of hope and the problems of hope, we could actually work with hope more effectively to achieve our goal. In fact, the merits of hope and the powers of hope overshadow the disadvantages of hope. First of all, hope is an existential need. People could not live without hope. We need hope like food, like water, like sleep. Second of all, hope has also some measurable positive outcomes. We know that hopeful people have better academic achievements, have better athletic achievements. They actually live longer. So there's a connection between hope and objective, positive, measurable outcomes. And thirdly, and perhaps most importantly, everything we see around us was made by hope. All of humans' technological advancements, all of humans' social advancements, are hope-driven. People will them, people hope for them, worked hard, and then these things transpired. One of the best examples is Zionism. Zionism is a hope-driven project. In fact, when we look at all the countries in the world, the only nation that has hope as a central theme in its national anthem is Israel. That's the only nation with hope in its anthem. Hatikva. So now I hope I convinced you that it's okay to talk about hope. But then many people ask me, and rightly so, well, is there hope? Is there hope to end this crisis? Is there hope for coexistence in the Holy Land? Is there a hope for a healthy democratic state in Israel? This is an important question, but most of the time when people are talking about hope, they are talking about one of two dimensions of hope. They are talking about what we call the expectation dimensions of hope, which relates to people's assessment of feasibility. So when people ask, is there hope? They're asking, is there a chance? Is it likely to happen? But there's actually another dimension, a more important dimension of hope, that what we call the wish dimension, which is related and driven by people's desires, aspirations, dreams, determinations. And so when we ask, is there hope? We need to ask, how determined are people? How strong is their dream? How much do they wish these things to happen? And there's an answer for this also. And I'm going to exemplify by telling you what happened to me on the 7th of October. So like millions of Israelis, I was listening to the news and I was devastated. I was shocked, I was concerned, I was frightened. But like millions of Israelis, I was also part of the huge movement for democracy. And this movement had tens, if not hundreds, of WhatsApp groups to coordinate the activities and the protests of the movement. But on the 7th of October, all of the WhatsApp groups changed their purpose. And now the only thing that they were concerned about was initiating and coordinating tens and hundreds of activities to support the home front and the battle front. And so I joined one of these activities. I was volunteering as a driver. And our mission was very, very simple. Take civilians from the south and bring them to safety. Take soldiers and officers from their house and bring them to their bases and to the front line. This is what we did. And it was very, very simple. So this is just a screenshot from my WhatsApp. It was very simple. Someone said, who is available to take two people from Netivot to safety? And someone said, okay, I'll do it. And then this person took these two people and brought them to safety. Who is available to take two soldiers from Beersheba to the battlefront in the north? I said, I'll do it. And I went to Beersheba and drove to the north. And so for 2-3 weeks, all I did was crisscross Israel and drive civilians and soldiers to where they needed. What you see now is the correspondence on the 8th of October, on the day after. Okay? This is everybody participating. You know how many people were in my WhatsApp group? 750. Do you know how many WhatsApp groups there were just of the drivers? 15. So more than 10,000 Israelis, all they did in these 3 weeks was drive civilians and soldiers to where they needed until everyone was in their place. And there were millions of Israelis participating in hundreds of activities to support the home front and the battle front. From preparing and transporting food to opening kindergartens and schools, hosting evacuees in their home, everyone was participating. Arabs from the south and the north were participating. Orthodox Jews from Jerusalem and Bnei Brak were participating. Hipsters from Tel Aviv were participating. Everyone was contributing. Everyone was participating and involved, except, of course, the government. In fact, we are in a point of history when there's no starker gap between the brave and courageous citizens of Israel, soldiers and civilians alike, and the government, which did not function. So you ask me if there is hope? That's an easy question. Look and see the citizens, the civilians, the soldiers of Israel, and you'll see plenty of hope. You'll see the dream, you'll see the determination there. And I want to end by talking about another unique feature of hope. And this is the unique connection between hope and action. Erich Fromm, one of the most important philosophers who talked about hope, said, there's no such thing as idle hope. Meaning, even if you hope for something sincerely, but you don't do anything about it, that's not hope. That's something else, but that's not hope. So hope is always connected to action, always connected to engagement. In fact, we see also empirical evidence for this connection between hope and activity. So, in other words, hope is not something that you say. Hope is something that you do. And so I hope you have a fruitful conference and that you continue to support citizens of Israel. And before we end, I want all of us to remember our brothers and our sisters. Our brothers and our sisters held in captivity, and this is our responsibility to bring them back home. Now, thank you so much.